The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. This has been a pretty crazy week. A lot of things have been happening. There was the Kentucky Derby, which I always say that I only gamble with my life and not with my money. But if I would have gambled with my actual money, I would have won because my horse totally finished first. And, it's growing up doing classic cars and motorcycles. California Chrome seemed to be the right choice. Then also, we've got the Manhattan Cocktail Classic coming up all this week and weekend, a little bit spilling into next week, so that's going to be really cool. And then, Monday night, just 2 nights ago, was the James Beard Awards, where two of my favorite bars were both in the running for Best Bar Program. And I, personally, I couldn't have picked one or the other over the other. But I am really proud of both of them for being nominated, and I'm very happy to have in the studio today a couple of my friends who actually work at the Nomad and were very instrumental in making that choice the choice that they made. So congratulations to the Nomad in New York City. And today in the studio we have Jessica Gonzalez. And then soon, she's running a little bit behind, but we have head bartender Karen Fu. So welcome to the show, Jessica.
Hello.
How do you feel about the accolade?
It's pretty awesome. We were nominated last year, and right. I was still the head bartender at that time. I went through this previous year. I just left about a month ago as the head bartender there, and so I still feel very much part of the family, and it was a huge deal. I feel like the company has kind of gotten very acquainted with winning these awards. 11 Madison Park has won several. But Nomad is just it's been growing so much and doing so well, and it's not just the bar, but the restaurant itself is just constantly pushing and really trying to achieve more every day.
Yeah. I think I remember when you guys were nominated last year, and I was really gunning for you guys then, too. What's cool about, just to shoot off a little bit here, all these awards, Leo and I both got the Starships Awards a few years ago. That's actually how I met him. And he's just been pulling awards.
I thought he was straight. He was hitting on me.
That's where I first met him. And then I had never been to 11 Madison Park at the time. So then I've been a couple of times since then. And then the Nomad Open, which it's only been open for two years.
Yeah. 2 years.
Wow.
We just hit our 2 year mark.
That's crazy.
A month ago was the 2 year mark. But it opened with such fanfare, and so many people were interested in what was going to happen there. And it lived up to expectations. And I think it exceeded expectations. And what goes on behind that bar, I've worked in a lot of bars. I've been in this industry a long time. And I have never worked in a place where you have to use every single set of your skills. And that is that bar. Every single set of your skills. Because you're serving somebody a fine dining dinner with wine and doing wine pairings, and you're also three deep with making dirty martinis, cosmos, and vodka sodas. And then you're making high end cocktails, and there's everything is embodied into one experience, and you're doing it at a fast pace.
Yeah.
So it's moving fast, getting it all done.
Oh man, that's
anybody who can work there, they can work anywhere.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'd never really thought of it that way. Because normally, you know, like, yeah, I mean, like, you're doing the vodka soda drinkers, the Cosmo drinkers, but then you're doing the high end, then, like, well, the classic cocktails, and then the custom cocktails, and then you're doing the food service too. And it's like, and it kind of gets clubby at night too. So it's does. Like, it's,
there's a lot of moments where you're like, I don't even feel like I work in a cocktail bar at all.
Yeah.
But it's this, the whole ethos of the company. It's different than your Death & Co., where it's like, this is what we are. Come here for this.
Yeah.
Sorry, we don't do that.
It's everything.
At Nomad and at 11 Madison Park, there is no. Yeah. That word does not exist. So you really need to have something for everybody.
Yeah.
At the same time, like, you have to control some crazy people, but you know, there's always crazy people.
There's always crazy people, that's for sure. Oh, man. I was just thinking, like, you have to tap into every, like, one of your, like, basically you go through your resume and you're like, okay, this is this job I'm doing right now, this job that I did, I'm doing now. Yeah. You know, it's like, that's crazy. It's weird to think about.
It is a little bit. You know, they trained me over at 11 Madison Park before I went there, which I thought I was going to go into that and kind of know what was up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought I knew what was up. And then I got there and I was like, oh, shit, this kind of service. I've never done anything like this. But, you know, that helped a lot, understanding the company. And then, you know, cracking the whip on everybody to kind of get in line with the company that came on board. And we just had, it's like, Brian Miller would always call, like, Nomad, Death & Co. being the Yankees. I kind of felt like I had, like, a new Yankees team. Because I had so many awesome people that just were so passionate. And maybe they didn't know how to stir when they first got there. But they
were into it.
They were so passionate. And, like, everybody worked so hard to get that place where it is.
Yeah.
And it's kind of remarkable to see people that passionate, you know, and everyone being that passionate.
You know, I was just thinking, like, as you were saying that, you know, when you're wearing all these different hats, like, service-wise, and especially, like, high volume, it's hard for me to imagine, like, being behind the bar and achieving really great, like, personal, like, customer service in a high volume situation. Do you find that, like,
it's definitely difficult. There's moments where it's very challenging, and sometimes you have to try and ask the people behind them to stop leaning on them, you know, like, please get off of them.
Stop waving money at me. A $1 bill or your $100 bill.
I would, like, you're always trying to push them to one side. Like, you've got two people at the bar.
Yeah.
Come over here. No, you have to order over here. Come over to this side of the bar. Come over to this side. But
I like the actual audio effect from you walking away from the microphone just now. That really nailed it.
Come over here.
I'm over here now.
But yeah, it becomes a little bit challenging because you want to give everybody this amazing experience. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, it happens. Yeah. There have been moments where I've been like, oh my God, these people are paying like a lot of money. They just spent like $72 on a chicken for two and like a really nice bottle of wine and got Coravin and like cocktails, and they're bawling out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have these people around them yelling in their ears and you're like, oh,
yo, bro.
Please.
Yo, bro.
Please don't do that.
Three bucket cranberries. You know, like,
but generally speaking, people are very understanding and really awesome guests when they appreciate what you're doing. They tend to be understanding about the environment, too.
If you're in the bar room at it doesn't matter like how like nice or high end of a place. There are certain things about like being a good customer that you have to you have to understand. You know, you have to first of all being a good customer. You don't like yell over like somebody sitting there having a chicken for two and a bottle of wine. They're clearly like having a nice date. You know,
right?
Yeah, it's responsibility falls on the customers as well. And it's like if you. It goes in so many ways, but if you are that customer sitting at the bar having dinner there, it's like you didn't go to a table, you came to the bar, so you have to expect it. It's It's going to be rowdier.
A little bit, you know.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Jeff Tascarella, who's the GM at Nomad, he once described it as vodka soda zombies. They just come at you with their arms like, hey, vodka soda. And I always thought that was like, that's perfect. That's exactly what
that's exactly what it is. Like with soggy dollar bills. Like, that's, oh man, I wish I hadn't heard that because I'm going to start using that now.
I know. As soon as I heard it, I had to start using it too.
That's awesome.
But that's what, they're actually opening another bar adjoining Nomad. There's going to be another bar. It's going to be more focused on the cocktails and being a bar. And they're going to try and keep the Nomad bar a little bit more low-key and sitting and dining. It's going to have a different menu at the other bar of slightly more, like, bar-oriented, but still elevated, for sure. Like, what they're doing with the food over there is going to be really cool, too.
Nice.
But it'll be, it's a separate kitchen, and I think it's going to alleviate some of that.
Yeah.
And kind of push people like, oh, if you're looking for that, you can go over here and just like drink and stand and, you know, get a table of people like having like a communal cocktail type environment.
Yeah. Totally.
So I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see what happens over there.
Yeah, man. The place is only 2 years old. So
yeah,
you think about that in the timeline of a bar and a restaurant. It's like, yeah, expansion always happens, you know, and so that's great. I mean, like, it's really exciting to see, like, you know, even thinking about what's going to happen even after that other bar opens, you know, because we haven't even talked about the library yet.
The library is pretty sweet.
Yeah, I
about to turn into for hotel guests only.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty baller.
Hey, all of you radio listeners, you should probably get there soon because it's about to, unless you want to get a hotel room.
The rooms are really nice, but I'm not going to talk about that. All right. Let's go to a commercial break. And then when we get back, we'll continue talking about the Nomad winners of the 2014 Bar Program Award. Was that an applause? I think Jack's finding the applause button. Sweet. That was perfect.
That was awesome.
All right, we'll be back in just a few.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. In the studio today, we have the winners of the recent Bar Program Award for the James Beard Awards, the Nomad in New York City. And before the break, it's probably going to get kind of weird. We're talking about the library at the Nomad. And then we started talking about the room. So we're going to switch gears now.
The rooms are, those beds are awesome, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Most of the times that I've been in the rooms,
the bathtubs are really sweet too.
Well, that's I think that's a personal experience moment. for the most part, I've only stayed in the rooms like, oh, okay, I'm going to get 3 hours of sleep max if I stay here. So
yeah.
I think I should stay here.
Nice. You know, it's the idea of the it's one of the things that the Nomad really makes me think about is the old school idea of like the hotel bar. It's like really bringing it back, but in more of like a modern way on the classic
idea.
Yeah,
the concept was so well thought through, and they really considered a lot of different variables and really wanted to be that bridge between like uptown and downtown sort of even mentality. And they're in a neighborhood where there's really, they're bringing this neighborhood up.
Yeah.
Like putting that restaurant there is making this neighborhood cooler. And it's just getting expensive, and people are starting to buy up the spaces left, right, and center.
Yeah.
Like it's just, it makes sense, right? So here you are, you're where other people want to be, and the neighborhood's changing. And it used to just be a lot of like wigs and
like luggage
and
bodegas, you know, luggage bodegas.
I still smell pot on the street whenever I'm walking to work, which is
that's
because
I'm
cool.
Usually like walking next to you.
And sometimes you'll smell it through, like when they were doing construction, because you were getting air through the bar. Because there was like a hole through the bar, you would sometimes smell weed in the bar because they were smoking weed over at one of these shops, like on the street. You would actually,
oh, weird.
It would actually come through. And I'm like, oh, someone's smoking weed out there. You can smell it.
I used to smell weed at my bar, but it's because I work for the Franks.
Well, I mean, that's a whole other thing. You guys are like, nobody can like be at the Nomad and smoke weed. It doesn't work that well. I mean, there are probably some people
vibe.
That could do it, but I'm definitely not one of them.
I don't know if I could either.
It's like
I would
too,
be so frightened.
It's too freaking.
Yeah. It would turn into the hotel from The Shining. I have to be at home on the couch. Wow. Okay. So, but you know what I mean? Like the old school like hotel bar. You know, I just had last week. I had Sean and Jack from the Dead Rabbit. You know, they worked at the Merchant Hotel in Belfast, and
right.
It was like a very strong, like very hardcore, like bar program, but in this hotel, and it's like there's something really romantic about the concept of the hotel bar. I mean,
I agree, and I think there's a lot of things that make sense for the traveler going there and having it be an all-encompassing experience, because when you travel, yes, you want to see all of New York, but you also need to have a little bit of like comfort and relaxation. Otherwise, you're going to freak out.
You're going to freak out, man. Yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know, like with the boutique hotels that are out there. I mean, like, I guess it kind of started with the Standard in LA, and then the Ace started popping up around.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like anyone's really gone.
I don't think anyone's done it to the level that Nomad has done it. I really don't. I think that they've kind of like set a new bar.
Yeah.
They kind of like raised
a new bar.
It. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Jack, that's going in the quotes. Sorry. No, but you're absolutely right. I mean, and it has all the elements, and it's, I don't know, it's a really romantic place, you know?
It is. The look and the feel, and it's like the texture of it and everything. It just like you walk in and you feel slightly transported, and everything is tasty, and everything is like an experience being there. I was very proud to be able to like be the head bartender there and like have my guests experiencing this sort of thing. You know, you want to be able to give people as much as you can in our profession. And it was like so cool that you're like, oh yeah. When people walk in, they're like, oh my God. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just back here working, but I get it.
And then you get to do silencers with Jim Kearns every once in a while.
Yes. They are enjoyable. I worked with them at Play recently and like, and I was just like, I love that that's a thing. I love the silencer.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of the silencer, especially at Nomad, because the wine is so good.
You're doing like silencers of like white burgundy.
No, we did the cheap stuff, but I mean, it's a silencer.
Even the cheap stuff is still really good.
The cheap stuff still works. Rosé on tap silencers, you know? Oh,
that's awesome. Okay, for the listeners, a silencer is Jim Kearns, who's been on the show several times. Last time he was actually here talking about Play, the bar that you're referencing. Yeah. The silencer is basically a staff shot. It's not really a shot. It's more than a shot.
It's more than a shot. It's a helping.
A generous helping.
A generous helping of wine.
Of wine.
White.
White wine.
Rosé. Something cold.
Something cold and fast.
And you chug it. Chug it fast. It's kind of like the wine equivalent to the...
Shotgunning a beer.
Shotgunning a beer, yeah. I had to show you so that you could tell me how to say
yeah.
it.
You did this gesture, and I was like, oh, yeah, shotgunning a beer. You could have been talking about anything. And I would have been like, oh, that looks just like shotgunning a beer. Dude, oh, man, Jim kind of, he comes up with all kinds of crazy stuff. I'm really glad.
He's
you know,
awesome.
Yeah, and just on that note, you know, it's been awesome, like, going in there and seeing so many of the city's like best bartenders behind the bar, you know?
I know. I mean, I was so excited to have Jim come on board when he was like interested. I was like, please. Yes.
Yeah.
And it was really awesome for a lot of the people that work there, because we have a lot of people that are newer to the whole experience and were there to learn and grow and solidify themselves in New York. Mm-hmm. And for them, like, Jim Kearns is, like, such a rock star. And they're just like, oh, I get to work with Jim Kearns? Oh, my God. You know? So that was really exciting. Same thing with, like, Dom Venegas and, mm-hmm. like, having these guys who are just sort of so well-known and, like, you read about them and then you get to work with them and, yeah. you know, and learn from them. It's kind of a, you know... And Leo, of course.
Yeah, and you yourself,
know, but,
of course.
But like a lot of them already knew Leo from being down at Tails, because a lot of people came from the CAP program.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The
That was a nice thing. Like, yeah. Can you imagine Leo? He's like, oh, I have like all of these people that I know that I can pull from. Like, oh, you were a really good worker and you're really cool and I like you. I want to bring you on.
Yeah.
So... And then it's like you don't need their resume and judge them from the resume. You're actually judging them because you hung out with them and worked with them.
I think in this industry, that's what everyone should kind of aspire to. Like, be someone where you don't need a resume anymore. Yeah. I think that's just it in general in life. It's like you work to a point where you work really hard and you're known for your work and then you don't have to have a resume anymore.
Yeah, right? I finally feel like I might be a kind of in that place.
I think you are.
I might be in that place.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I know, because I have fashioned many a resume in my life.
Every once in a while, you know, you're supposed to, like, even if you're not looking for another job, you go and, like, update it just for, like, different accolades or, like different kinds of, like,
right.
training programs and things that you go through. And, like, I go through and I'm like, I should probably, I'm like, you know, I've got nothing. I've done my laundry. And I've had lunch and, you know, I'm all cut up on Game of Thrones. So I got nothing else to do now. So maybe I'll update my resume. And then I open up the file on my computer. And I'm like, hey, this sucks. I'm going to the bar. But
yeah.
It's like, yeah.
I actually had a really good one because I was in interior design mm-hmm. for a while. Like, that's why I was at Death & Co. I was trying to pursue that and, like, going to school for that. I have such an awesome layout for a resume. I'm like really proud of the layout that I created.
But no one's ever gonna see it.
No one's ever gonna see it. I'm like, God, that looks good. God, that's sexy.
Man, I really
that
really
is such
nailed
a
it.
Sexy fucking resume. Pardon my language. I don't know if that's
okay.
a problem or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's oh, here's Keifu.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi.
Okay.
We're just talking about sexy resumes.
Oh.
Well, speaking of sexy, hello, oh. sexy.
Come on
hi,
in.
Sexy. Hi, Mom there. Come on.
Hi, Keifu. Grab a microphone. It's some headphones.
Okay.
So we've been talking about the Nomad, and congratulations again, by the way. Can you hear?
Thank you. I can't hear out of this, but...
Maybe try that one.
Awesome. Can you hear?
Yeah, I can.
All right.
So congrats. Ooh,
thank again. You.
We've been talking all about the Nomad. We got into a conversation about hotel bars and the romantic nature of them and how this one's really going above and beyond. And yeah, now you're here. So what's going on?
A lot of exciting, thrilling things. I agree with the old hotel aspect. There's a kind of like what I like to think of like opulent New York going on at the Nomad. It's very much a culture. I do think some guests feel intimidated, but once they're in, it's high ceilings, dark mahogany wood. We offer a lot of the best of everything. So it's always fascinating to see guests and visitors kind of roam around. And I'm currently reading Up in the Old Hotel by Joseph Mitchell. And there's very much still a romanticized perspective about all this, and it still exists in New York, so
yeah.
Yay.
Nice. Yay.
We haven't even talked about the style of cocktails. Like what would you say is the like quintessential like style of cocktail? Like what makes like a Nomad cocktail?
We think stick to a lot of the old classics. And our proprietary renditions are variations of them, with, you know, one or two aspects of savory or innovation. But because we are high volume, keeping that in mind, we do use a lot of syrups, but have to be able to consistently churn those out. So while it is hotel prices, we do get a lot of people who order the classic Manhattan Old Fashioned, and we offer the high quality of them all, and are able to run a good range of the citrusy, tart, refreshing versus spirit forward. And a lot of people are more open to the spirituous cocktails there. But we can do huge cocktail explosions for big parties and groups, that, yeah, it's kind of astounding to see.
It's so fun. We have a lot of fun with them.
Pebble ice, yeah.
I'll give props out to John Armstrong for the cocktail explosion master.
Oh, absolutely. And it's become a thing now, so not to give too much away, but with the expansion, it will be its own category.
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier, actually. Next door. Yeah. Large format cocktails.
Awesome. Large format cocktails? Yeah. Everyone gets a punch bowl.
Yes.
Single serving punch.
It's a cocktail
ogre style.
Vessel.
You gotta pick it up and drink it like ogre.
You should like have one served in like a pig head.
Yeah, it's above and beyond tiki. It's just the magnitude of the cocktail just drops on the table and everyone goes crazy.
That's awesome.
It's kind of like the Grand Plateau of cocktails.
Sweet. That's not a bad idea. You could use like the plateau, like the dishes that they put the ice in. Like a flat punch bowl with a bunch of straws and then stack. Ooh, I like this. All right, we got to talk about this after the show.
That's for behind the scenes talk.
Got it. Done. Well, you mentioned that a lot of, you know, like, there are a lot of like stirred, like kind of boozier cocktails. Mm-hmm. Do you find that that's. Because I do. I think it's very unique for most hotel bars.
I think from a bartender's perspective, or perhaps craft bartender perspective, I find it pretty refreshing. And maybe it's the sheer fact that our demographic may come in after work, really take in the hotel atmosphere, and just right away like ask for an old fashioned. So
yeah, there's definitely a great mix of people that come in, and mm-hmm. there's all types. All types of people, but
I think stirred and boozy enough, makes sense.
There's a stirred and boozy crowd that comes in, and there's a cocktail crowd that comes in. It's not that's the only crowd,
mm-hmm.
but makes it almost exciting when you do have them come in, because you're like, yes, you're here for the cocktails, awesome. And you get regulars, you get the whole, you know, the gamut of a bar. But
and because we do have certain syrups that supply a good savory quality to them. We also use a lot of Amaro and sherry. They don't involve infusions or more complex syrup making. So that's also refreshing too. We can introduce people to, you know, the Hair Trigger, which is based off Fernet Branca, or a cocktail with three different kinds of sherry to someone who's never had sherry.
That's awesome. What's the gateway for those people? Like, I always think that, like, especially like stronger, like bitters, like Fernet or like sherry, even chartreuse to a certain extent.
Yeah.
They're like, sometimes like people aren't as adventurous with those flavors and they wouldn't go for them, but like, you have to have a gateway.
Yeah, like there's always several of those, I think.
An ingredient, yeah. You know, that like leads them in, you kind of trick them into drinking.
I think we have a good aperitif section. So if there is time to point that out to a guest, I'll point it out, and or just by appearance. Cobbler with pebble ice, or the Hair Trigger is dark with dark maroon with mint plush and cucumber.
Yeah, there's always like, okay, mint warning, cucumber. This drink might just not be about cucumber. You should probably reconsider your drink if you don't like these flavors.
Yeah. I mean, mint and cucumber.
It's really funny hearing my voice.
Yeah, there's some nice echo and resonance going on.
Yeah. No, I think I know there's a way to get people to drink those ingredients. It's just always interesting to hear like what these almost like keywords and like key ingredients are that like, it's like, oh, it has watermelon in it. That's cool. But then it also has sherry and like Chiocharo Amaro, you know? It's
yeah.
Like,
right.
We had that drink, like the Cardinal, that had like five sherries or five Amaros by Gino, and it ultimately ended up tasting like bitter watermelon.
That was a good drink. I like that drink. That was a great
drink. I want that right now.
Yeah, it's actually, I was just thinking the same thing. I was like, oh, that sounds lovely.
But like the way we're talking about it right now, it kind of sounds like evil trickery, but it's really like, you know, like when, like we were talking before, like it'll get very high volume and kind of on the like borderline like clubby in there. But mm-hmm. like when you don't have time to like talk your guests through like a bartender's choice and like, you know, have that conversation with them, it's like, oh, you should totally have this one, man.
I think it'd be yeah, I love
it. And then, people, then you turn them on to something new.
They'll kind of have roving eyes and suddenly see a bartender make four shaken, four stirred, and are suddenly pique their interest. And so that is one part of it. Another, maybe people who have sat in the dining room, and then every room in that restaurant carries its own curated experience. So it's very transient, I think.
Yeah. It becomes a little bit, I think, of like reading your guest and
yes.
and taking like one or two words that you can get from them in that moment and like totally judging them based upon the way they look, what they just said, and like, it's judgment. I will judge you and give you a drink.
It's an absolute
because like, I don't have time. I don't have time to like spend, you know, like being at Death & Co. or PDT mm-hmm. where you have time to like talk to them about the drink. Oh, let's talk about this. I don't have time to talk to you that much because I've got other people waving at me right now.
Yeah.
So, let's get this done expediently and like.
I kind of like that aspect about working there because it's almost, it can be everything all at once. You have diners with like full coursed out meal in front of you, guests standing who just want maybe a Pilsner or a Pinot Noir. You can tell right away who they are. And then the people who might take the time to like ask a question or like wide eyed gaze.
The worst is when you're like, okay, I'm ready to take your order. I've got like two other orders here. I mean, this guy looks like a Pinot Noir or a Pilsner guy, and then he orders five cocktails and they're all different, and you're like, shit.
That yeah. does happen.
You're like, damn it. I totally didn't think that's what you were going to order.
But it catches you by surprise, and then in the end, in hindsight, you're like, that's awesome. So
yeah, it's hard to judge even positively sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you get caught. And yeah. then, like, person, that, like, especially industry people, a lot of times, like, when they'll come in, it's like Sam Ross comes into my bar and he, you know, I feel bad because he orders, you know, a Pilsner. I'm like, you don't like my cocktails? But he's like, I just got to work, man. I just want a beer.
Yeah, exactly.
I understand that.
Sam Ross is totally like that, too. I've experienced, like, I've felt the same way at moments where I've been like, but you're at my bar. Don't you want a cocktail? It's like, no.
Or no, a drink with no more than three ingredients, like a classic Negroni.
He gets a lot of Negronis, yeah.
I mean, I've definitely had beers at Death & Company.
Oh, absolutely.
But it wasn't because I didn't want the cocktails. I wanted to see my friends behind the bar. Yeah.
Exactly.
Or my friends.
Or something.
I do the same thing. Like, I'm sometimes just like, I'm sorry. I know you guys, like, have this awesome cocktail list, but God damn it, I've been tasting cocktails like crazy. Yeah.
Just want something bubbly.
Last thing I want is a cocktail.
I was just judging the World Spirits competition in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago, and you know you taste through. It's true. You like tasted through like 200 spirits in a day, and we were all just like, "Let's go to the fucking nearest bar and get so much beer." Like, you'd think you wouldn't want to drink after all that, but it was just like, "Dude, I just want a Pilsner. I'll take a Stella. I don't care."
Or like, just a little Fernet. That's all it takes.
Maybe. Sometimes it's just straight going for the beer.
Yeah.
Slam it down.
I totally understand because beer. That's what beer's there for.
Yeah.
It's to refresh you. It's to make you just like feel better. You just need a little like, oh, okay. It's
going to be okay.
Lack of pretension. Beer is not made to be pretentious.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I think it's been starting to become that, and I'm just like, no.
No.
No pretension with my beer.
Give me a beer.
Give me a big stein of it.
Although I appreciate the pretentious shit, I still, when I go into a bar, I got to admit, I just am like, this is what I want. Can you just give me what I want? And I totally get it when people come in and they're just like, can I get a beer?
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. It's like no frills. Or give me whiskey neat. That's it.
There you go. Well, I can't wait to go to the Nomad and drink a bunch of beer and whiskey neat. Actually, we can just do that here right now.
Hey.
I think we should, because we're actually at the end of the show. So I want to thank you again for coming on the radio today, even though you got here a little late, Karen.
I was behind a school bus.
That's okay. But Karen and Jessica from the Nomad, congratulations again. It's a huge honor that you guys just received this week. And I'm very, very proud of you.
Thank you, Damon.
I love you, Damon.
I love you.
I love you, Damon.
All right, let's go get that beer. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check in next week. Cheers.
Your rock and roll, Lord, knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The everyone's grooving them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.